Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will indeed encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. I also hope that you'll see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, it's my extreme pleasure to introduce Lila El-Sissi. She's going to tell a remarkable story of escaping an arranged marriage. Years ago, she was a shy, impressionable, and easily influenced 15-year-old, and her more rebellious 16-year-old sister, Ralia, learned that they were betrothed to men they had never met. They refused to live in the prison constructed by their Egyptian society, hoping for a better life than that of their mothers and aunts. Running from their controlling father, an abusive brother, and arranged marriages to men twice their age, Lila and Ralia risked their reputation and safety and plotted their escape. Out of the Shadows of Men, a memoir, tells the story of two sisters who found the courage to risk their lives and stand up to forces seemingly as large, strong, and ancient as the pyramids so they could choose their futures. El-Sissi moved first to Europe, then to Canada, and finally settled in the United States. She and her second husband have two sons and now live in the San Francisco Bay Area, where she works for a semiconductor company. So let me welcome Lila. Lila, once again, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good, good. Well, tell us how this all began many, many, many years ago.
Well, my sister and I, we were two young, sheltered, completely controlled and submissive to my father, who was an architect. He was an educated man, but culture took control of his emotion and his love towards us. And it was the summer after junior high when we were very happy to go to the beach, as we do every summer with my mother. And we came home the first day from the beach, and we were having dinner and looking forward to going the next day. And my father, out of the blue, just stood up and he pointed to me and to my sister. And he said, "You two will be betrothed next Thursday, and your marriage will be decided soon, within a year." We couldn't say no, and we couldn't defy our father because he was like God on earth. Nobody in the family could tell him no. But we didn't like what had happened to us. The men we have never met, we learned later from my mother that they were much older than us. Like, I was 15, he was 39. And we decided that the only way we could escape is let my father do the legal contract of marriage. And then we can use this power that we have in our hand to plot our escape.
How did you ever manage to do that? And backing up, first of all, Did you have any idea something like this was going to happen to you, that you were going to be betrothed?
No. My mother, none of us knew. Nobody knew. I mean, it came out of the blue. Like, imagine being 15 years old and suddenly you are told that you have only 5 days and you're going to be married. Imagine that.
My goodness. What kind of feeling went through you at the time?
I passed out, you know. I couldn't believe. I just passed out because at that specific summer, you know, the year before, we were, my sister and I walking on the beach, and this young man from Lebanon, you know, he stopped us and he kind of gave me a compliment. And at that time, to have a compliment from a guy was something big, because I was raised believing that I was an ugly girl because I had an olive skin and I was skinny. Unlike my sister, she was plump and she had fair skin. So everybody in the family pointed at me like, poor you, you will never have somebody, to a guy to look at you or come and marry you. But then that summer, this guy who was very good looking, he gave me a compliment, and I kind of like was so happy. And here my father comes and say, oh, next Thursday you will be married. So it was really a shock, and I passed out that night, that evening.
Were you able to express any of your feelings, or because your father was so controlling, did you have to keep it all to yourself?
Yeah, I couldn't express, neither was my mother. My mother used to tell me all the time, just accept your fate. You cannot change your fate. And better a shadow of a man than a wall over your head or something like that. And this is where I got the title of my book. I said, I am out from the shadow of men. Because my mother used to repeat this proverb. And until today, you can hear this proverb saying, better a shadow of a man than a shelter or an education or anything. It's like a girl, no matter what she does, she will end up marrying a man and her education will not do her any good. So
I love the title.
I remember that that day when I came out from after I passed bypassed out, and I just told him, I hate you. And I had the courage to tell him that. And I couldn't do more than that.
Yeah.
And
no.
The funny thing is that I saw tears in his eyes. And I knew that, I didn't know then, but now as a mature person, I know that Father didn't like to see me suffer. He probably didn't like to do this to us, but the culture was forcing him. It's like, now you are 15, now you are menstruating. He was so terrified that we will go out with men and we will lose our virginity. So marriage was the solution for him, a quick solution. So he wouldn't live with that burden.
I see. Well, what did you and your sister have to say to each other after that night?
Oh, my sister was so rebellious. And I if it wasn't for my sister, I wouldn't be here today talking to you. I would probably be still in Egypt. But she was the strong one in this she was guiding me, and she told me, don't worry, I will find a way to get out of this. And she kept her promise to me. And first she left her husband, and she ran away and lived with my aunt. And then after that, she helped me, but it took me longer than her to get my divorce, because my husband used a legal right. He went to court, and got a court order to take me by force to live with him. But my aunt refused to let me go. And then my brother came around and he punched me in the face and broke my tooth. But still, I didn't go with him.
No, you were still in Egypt at the time then.
I didn't get what the question.
Oh, at that point in time, you were still in Egypt.
Oh, yeah. All this happened in Alexandria in Egypt, yeah. And girls at that time, you cannot go anywhere. You need the approval, the signed approval of either your husband or your father. I couldn't go out of Egypt even if I wanted to. So I needed the divorce paper.
I understand. That must have been remarkable, even arranging a divorce.
Oh, my God, yes. Because in Egypt or the Middle East, you know, girls cannot get their divorce. They just cannot go and ask for divorce. You know, many women also, when they get married, they are not informed of their rights. And it is not part of the culture to negotiate conditions of marriage. And in fact, you know, girls are often not even present during the negotiation process. So, you know, to ask for divorce or it's not easy. I mean, a man has the right to declare three consecutive times, I divorce Z, three times, and the woman is divorced, finished. But a woman has to go to court to ask for divorce, and many women don't have the money to hire a lawyer, so they end up with no alimony, with no child support. And they stay for years and years asking, you know, and going to court, sitting at the door to see if they could get a penny from the husband. In the meantime, the husband doesn't divorce her legally, but he can go and marry another woman and have children with her. And there is no law that will condemn him for that. Something
well,
is wrong.
Yeah, I would say so. Absolutely. Your aunt must have been a courageous woman to have taken you in.
Oh, yeah. My father didn't like my aunt because my aunt was living a very liberal life, and they were not controlled by the culture. So my father even forbade my mother to go to visit her. So when we went there, my father said to my mother, if you ever go to see your daughters at your sister's house, you will be divorced. And my mother believed him. So she used to meet us outside at a friend's house. This is how women are so submissive and so treated like second citizens, like they have no rights, they have no voice, they have no means to get their rights. And for a man to tell her, if you go to see your sister, you will be divorced, and my mother kind of believed it, that's so bad. Something needs to be done about this. We need some law to be put in order now. We have a new president who is really giving women a lot of rights, but still it's not enough. It's not enough when it comes to marriage and divorce.
Are you at all optimistic that that day will come?
Not in my lifetime or the next generation, because all this social laws is somehow they make it sound like it's coming from the Quran, the holy book of the Muslim people. That it's written how women should be treated, should be divorced, should be married, and all this. So I hope you know, right now there is people who are really working so hard to get in Egypt to make religion separate from politics. And I hope they can succeed, but I have doubts. People in Egypt, especially people who are economically not as good as other people. They, you know, when you are poor, you take religion as the savior. You become so close to God and you believe everything in the Bible or in the Quran. And many of those people, they don't even read what's in the Quran. They just believe what they see on the television from extremists who are saying that women should be locked up, women should not go out, women should be covered, women have no rights, a man has all the rights, a man can marry a girl 9 years old or 8 years old, she doesn't have to have her period, and he can marry her even if he's 90 years old. So some women who are illiterate, they do believe that. So you have to fight not only men, what they do, you have to also educate women, to educate them about their rights, about the real. God cannot be so cruel to condemn women and make men, you know, rule them in such a cruel way with no rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, what grounds did you use to divorce your husband?
It took me like 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The ground is that I was determined to marry him because I did not choose him. I don't even remember that I sat with him and we talked together. I didn't even give him a chance or give myself a chance to know him. The fact that my father was siding with him and he was listening to my father and going along with the marriage without even coming and asking me, why did I run away? Why I don't want him? That by itself made me reject him. And there is no grounds except that I didn't want him. And when his mm-hmm. father is the one who forced him to sit down and give him my divorce, it wasn't him.
His father was the one?
Yeah, his father finally told him, listen, you know, if she doesn't want you, then you better divorce her and let her go, because now they believe that when I run away, I am not good enough for him or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The honor of the family. I did something to the honor of the family, so I am not good enough to be his wife, which was okay with me.
I'm sure that at any cost it was worth it for you to get out, eh?
Of course, yeah. Mm. And I did, you know. It took me a lot. I couldn't see my mother. I couldn't see my brother and sisters. And when I left Egypt, I was still a teenager, completely innocent, completely sheltered. I have nothing. My father took me out of school, and I had nothing with me, but I had a strong desire to be free, to live the way I want, and to do what I want, and to choose the man I want to live with. That was the only thing I took from Egypt.
Well, now, did you and your sister leave together, and how did you decide where to go?
No, my sister, when she went and lived with my aunt, she met also a Lebanese man, and she married him. He was like as old as my father, but my sister didn't mind. She just wanted to get out of Egypt, and she was really disturbed. I don't think she was capable of loving. All what she wanted is to get out of Egypt. And she married this man, and he took her in, and she helped me get out of Egypt, and then I joined her in Lebanon for a while before I got the invitation to immigrate to Canada from my uncle.
Well, tell us what happened after.
I think my mother was right. I think my mother was right when she... Excuse me?
I interrupted you. Go ahead and finish your thought, please.
You know, fate played a big role in my life. And this is when I always remembered my mother when she told me, accept your fate. And things happened to me that I never really planned, and it happened. When I sent a letter to my uncle in Canada and I told him, you know, I really want to leave the Arab world and I wish I could go to Canada. And he immediately sent me and he invited me over, and there I applied and I became an immigrant, a Canadian immigrant, which is something that was never in my mind. When I went out of Egypt, I thought I would be living with my sister forever. But we were separated then. And this actually, it's coming in my next book, what happened to us after we left.
Well, let's first talk about Out from the Shadows of Men. What would you like to say about your memoir?
I would like to say that I wrote this memoir to inspire young girls, because they could read the book and see themselves in my story. And I want to tell them that never give up and never accept anything forced on you, and always seek education no matter what, because I could never believe that I fought my brother, the culture, the society, and the religion, and I did what I did. If I could do that, any girl can do that. I have seen so many girls watching me read at Barnes & Noble, and they would come to me with tears in their eyes, and they say, oh, can I give you a check? Can you give me 5 books I want to send to my sister and my cousin, and, you know, and that makes me feel good, because I feel that my story is touching not only young girls in the Middle East, but young girls all over the world, even here. Even here, when they read it, they come and they say, oh, my God, even a girl from Vietnam, she said, when I read your book, I could see myself in there. My parents were doing the same to me. So I want to touch them, and I did.
That's marvelous. I'm wondering, for people of Muslim faith who move to this country, how pervasive are those kinds of attitudes that you experienced in Egypt over here?
Like, what do you mean, pervasive?
Well, for instance, is it customary for arranged marriages here? And how controlling are the men of the women here? What are the similarities and differences between the relations between the sexes in your homeland and over here amongst people of the same faith?
Believe me, it doesn't change. I have known young girls here from Afghanistan, from Pakistan, that they were forced into marriages. And you can hear their stories. And the girls, when they run away, the parents, they bring them and they kill them. Even in England, there is so many stories you hear about that. It has not changed. Culture does not change with borders. Like if you go to another country, it doesn't change. People come, go to different countries carrying on their back and in their mind the culture they were brought in. Even young girls, they know. Very few, maybe 10% or 20% of people, they change. The parents, they allow the girls to choose, or they allow the girls to go out with the boy to get to know him, but not the 80%, not the rest of the Muslim society. It's still the same. The boys are in control, and the father is in control, and the girls have no rights, and the girls are submissive, and the girls cannot say no, otherwise they will face a very harsh punishment.
Well, your story had a happy ending.
Genes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
Tell us what happened after you immigrated and what your life's been like since then, and then let's talk about the sequel.
When I left, I went to Lebanon, and one thing, you know, that you can, when you read my story, you can see how I developed. First, I was submissive first, and I was kind of the shy and the one that listened to my sister, and my sister was everything to me. But with time, I learned to trust myself and to trust my own judgment and not to be a follower and to be myself and to do what I want to do. And this is what happened when we went to Lebanon. This new personality came alive when my sister wanted to force me to marry in Lebanon because she believed that marriage is the only way that will keep me safe, because we had nothing and we were completely innocent and young, and it's very hard for girls in our situation to be safe. So she wanted me to marry to have somebody to be safe. And I told her, I said, I cannot do that because I ran away from something like that. All what I want is I want to go to school. I want to finish my education. And this is when we really clashed. And I went to Lebanon and I met a family which they took me as a daughter, and they helped me go to college. But after 2 years, I wanted to leave because I found myself a job at an attorney's office. And one day that attorney cornered me in the office, in his office, and he wanted to rape me, and I ran away. And I decided that this is it. I don't want to live in any Arab countries. And then I called my uncle. I sent him a letter, and I asked him if I could come and live with him. And this is when he invited me over, and I left Egypt, I left Lebanon, I left my sister, and I went to a brand new country with completely different culture, different people, people I never met. And you have to read this in my new sequel because I don't want to talk about it now.
All right. Well, we won't.
Because
what
it's
would you
full
like?
Of aches well, and pain.
Yes, yes. Well, so how far along are you with the sequel, and when do you expect it to be out?
I am halfway through the sequel, and I am right now busy because I got a publisher in Egypt who is going to, in the process of translating my book, and he is going to publish it all over the Middle East, and I will be going to promote my book very soon in one of the big book fairs in the Middle East. And in the meantime, I'm writing this, and I am also working and painter as well. So my plate is full, and I try to find time to finish my sequel as fast as I can, because everybody who read the book, they say, so what happened to the sisters? I say, okay, I'm going to finish it. I will let you know. And everybody, they say, you know, what happened? You know, when are you going to write about what happened to them? So I guess I have to, and I have to finish it as fast as I could. And I self-published the first book, and I have great reviews on Amazon. And I just don't have the time to promote my book. This is my only, you know, thing that's bothering me, that I don't have the time to, you know, to promote my book.
Well, it takes a lot of time, doesn't it? And it sounds like your life is very full.
Yeah, it is. It is. I'm very, very busy because, my job requires a lot of traveling as well.
Uh-huh. Well, where are the best places for people to find your book? And if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
They can find me at Facebook, which is Laila, LailaElSissi, LailaLCC.com is my website. And they can reach me there, and they can buy the book there or at Amazon.
Okay. Well, what shall we talk about now? I'm wondering if you'd be willing to talk about your own form of spirituality, if anything has remained intact for you, given the oppression that you experienced as a young girl.
You see, I was brought up in a French Catholic school. Can you believe this? Like my father, yes, my father being such a devout Muslim, found that a Catholic teaching environment is best for us because it was strict. But he didn't realize that being in French school, we got in touch with French, Italian, Greek, Jewish girls who were living a very liberal life, and we learned from them that girls are not supposed to be living the way we were living at home. Because we will be with those girls, they talk about that they are going to a movie tonight, or they had boyfriends, or they were doing whatever they want. But when we go home, we were in a very, very fundamental Muslim culture. And my father was very, very strict. Like, yet he was not forcing us to pray, nor to wear the veil. Nor did he want us to be circumcised, like, you know, the female genital mutilation. He didn't do that. So my father did not do that out of religion or religious belief. No, he did that out of belief that the culture wants him to do that. And then we were at that time, and most Egyptian people at that time, we were very spiritual, but we didn't have extremism in anything. Christian lived with us, Jews lived with us. We loved each other. We were in very good harmony living together. But then when we had the revolution, when we had a military coup that took the king out of Egypt, King Farouk. And when President Gamal Abdel Nasser came in, we hear about the Muslim Brotherhood, but we never really knew who they are and who they represent and what they want to do or anything like that. And President Gamal Abdel Nasser kind of knew they were, jeopardizing the harmony of the religion in Egypt, so he put them in jail. Then when Sadat came in, President Sadat came in after the death of President Nasser, Sadat came in and he gave them freedom. He took them out of jail and he let them roam around in Egypt. So what they did, they were going to the poor people, giving them money, giving them food, but in the meantime, brainwashing them about religion, brainwashing them, making them believe into a woman should be covered, a woman should not do this, a man should marry a young girl, a man can have four wives, somebody, if he steals, we should cut his hands. And also, the economy at that time was not good. So there was a lot of Egyptian, poor Egyptian, who went to the Gulf countries to work. And the ones who went to Saudi Arabia, they came back to Egypt with this fundamental ideology embedded in their brain. And they came back wearing that same kind of a short kaftan, and they had their beards, and they started to preach in the Egyptian society. But it was not really a religious message. It was using religion as a for politics to control
yes.
the Egyptian mind. And they did succeed because Mubarak, when he came, he didn't do anything for the poor people. He left the 85% of the Egyptian people in utter poverty. So what they did, those Muslim Brotherhood, they used to go door to door, give them some oil, to cooking oil or sugar or a flour or whatever they were doing. And they made some schools. And they went to mosques, and all what they were preaching poisoned. It poisoned the Egyptian minds of the poor people. So when we had the recent revolution, something happened. All those poor people who were taken care of by the Muslim Brotherhood came out, and they voted for a Muslim, a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. So when he came in power, he made himself a dictator, a fascist, like nobody can take him to court if he commits mistakes. He changed all the constitution, and he put rules in the constitution that women should stay home, women should not work, and all women should be circumcised, and a man can marry a girl as young as 8 years old. All this he put it in the constitution. And so what the Egyptian people did, they went out in the street in millions, and they demanded that he leave office. And the present president right now, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, he had no choice but to take this guy out. So when, and now Egypt really is not free from this extremist ideology. It's still in every institution. It's still in the mind of people. It's still as strong as it used to be. And some people are fighting it right now. Like the president of Egypt, he did something good. They elected 75 women out of a possible 568 seats in the new House of Representatives. And women's representation increased after the present president, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, was appointed. He appointed an additional 14 female members. The 89 female members in the parliament, they make up 14.9% of available seats, which is considered a giant leap in women's representation. And in one day, he hired 26 Egyptian women as presiding judges in the courts of in the first court. So he did a lot of stuff. He also demanded that all the religious institutions to revolutionize the religion message. But nothing happened. It's still the same. Because the Muslim Brotherhood, they are in every house, in every family. They control the mind of so many people. It's going to take Egypt a long, many, many, many years to get rid of them. So when you are talking about my own spirituality, after all what happened in Egypt and after all what I have seen from Muslim Brotherhood to the Salafi to this, and I read a lot about their ideology, about their belief and all this, now I have become a person, spiritual person, who believes in the goodness in every religion, whether it's Islam, whether it's Christianity, whether it's Judaism, because those three religions, they came as peace for people, to make people love each other and feel one is superior over the other. No, we are on this earth children of God. We are all the same. We need to love each other and to live in peace with each other. This is what I came right now to. This is who I am right now. And I wish everybody on this earth, they are like me.
That's a beautiful message to give to people. I think that there are too many people that are locked into the extremism of their ideologies, and how important it is, based on a testimony like yours, to recognize that it's imperative to open your mind to different possibilities and different ways of thinking if you're going to become free.
Of course. Of course. And you can see extremists in every religion. It's not only in Muslim religion. No.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, those people who, yeah. I mean, many people in America, they don't know, or maybe they have not seen, that there is some Jewish group of people who are as extremist as the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafis. They cover their women and they control their women. And all this is a nonsense. I mean, why they are afraid of women? Why? I mean, women, they cannot be second citizen because we are the one who get pregnant. We are the one who go through hell to deliver a baby. We are the one who don't sleep and feed and nurse the kids, the babies. We go through so much. How could God order in any religion that these women should be mistreated? It can be. It can be. So I don't know where those people, they get their messages from. Which book, whether Christian, Muslim, or otherwise, you know?
They certainly aren't messages or examples of love.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do have a caller on the line. Would you like to take a call?
Yes, sure.
Okay. I'm not sure who it is. They called in after the show started. They're from your area code. Caller, area code 510, who am I speaking with, please? Hello, is there a caller there that would like to speak with Lila? I guess not, Lila.
So maybe he got tired and hung up.
Well, no, he's been listening to whoever it is has been listening to the show very intently. But I found that some people go into the host queue that don't necessarily want to speak with the guest, and so sometimes they just remain silent when I bring them on the line. Well, so you would probably agree that religion and spirituality are two completely different things some of the time.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you are, spiritual, you are loving and you are accepting. When you are religious, you are one mind and one ideology and you don't accept.
Well, you must have a very strong faith to have endured everything that you endured. What role would you say that faith played in your ability to prevail as you have done?
Faith or faith?
Faith.
Oh.
S-A-I-T-H.
Yes. I want to tell you something, David. All the time, mm-hmm. I was running away and I was suffering and I was going from one place to another. I felt strongly that God was with me. God was guiding me. God was telling me, you do this and you don't do that. And stick to what you want to do. And I really strongly believe that God, until today, is guiding me. Asking me to do things that if I didn't have those messages from him, I would not take it because they are a giant leap for me in my life. And one time I was, just to let you know, one time I was parking my car in the parking lot of Stanford. And I parked the car and I opened the door and I saw something round and shining. The sun was hitting it so strongly right next to my door at the ground. And I picked it up and it was a round gold piece with one of the most important verses from the Quran. And I put it, and I wear it until now. I felt that it was a message from God. He is trying to tell me, I am with you. I will never leave you. I am with you.
And what is the verse?
It's in Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, God, you have God's protection. God will look after you. And in that meaning. It's called in Arabic, Ayat al-Kursi.
Well, you are a very positive person and obviously serving as a role model to other women who may be enduring fate similar to what you had experienced before you freed yourself. What role do you believe that positive thinking plays in shaping a person's destiny? And do we have the power to shape our own destiny?
Yeah, you see, if you have God in your heart and you are spiritual, you can, shaping your destiny becomes easy because God will be guiding you. So you might not think that you have any say in your destiny, but I believe God can guide you. If you are open, if your heart is open, he will guide you to the right destiny, what I believe. I have been to elementary school and junior high school talking to girls. I talk to them about me and about my book, and I don't talk in details, but I just want to inspire them and give them courage. And I get so teary eyes when I see them. They come and they say, oh, I want my mom to read your story. My mom is so spiritual, and I want her to know that somebody from Egypt is also spiritual. When that girl told me that, I had tears in my eyes.
I can imagine. What kinds of feedback have you gotten to your book?
You know, there is a lot of people who, they would come and tell me, Laila, when I read your story, I couldn't put the book down. I stayed up all night because I wanted to know what happened to those sisters. And other people will tell me, I read the book so fast because I wanted to know what happened, but now I'm going to read it again so slowly to live it again. Those kind of comments really makes me feel happy. Like one time I was at Barnes & Noble's and a woman with her young daughter, they bought the book. And then 3 months later, I found an email from her. And she said you don't understand what your book had done to me. And she's an American woman. She is not Afghani. She is not Pakistani. She is not Egyptian. She was an American woman. And those are the kind of comment or emails that makes me happy. And I want to reach many, many, many more women and girls to read my book. I have had men read my story, and they said to me that we were in tears reading your book. Men, can you imagine?
That's remarkable and wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very touching, and that's what makes me want to write. And they people tell me that your style of writing, it's we can pick up your book between 100, and we can tell that this is your writing. This is your style. And they tell me it's very poetic, and it's very very coming from your heart. All these comments make me so wanting to write more and more and more.
Well, that was my next question. What are your future plans after you finish the sequel, as far as writing goes?
Yeah, I have a story that I want to write. And it's going to be a novel. And I have it already brewing in my head, and I want to write it. So I'm not, it's going to be a surprise. And I'm keeping it for a secret right now, but it's going to be another good book. Hopefully people will like it as much as they did for this one and the one coming.
I'm sure it will be wonderful.
Poetry.
What about poetry?
I kind of wrote one poem in my life, but and it's on my Facebook if anybody wants to read it.
Well, I'm going to have to check it out.
yeah.
You know, I've often heard it said that, well, I believe everybody has a story to tell, and that there are a lot of people that have a desire to write their own story or to write a book, but they have no idea how to go about it. What kinds of advice or suggestions would you make to people like that?
Okay, I want to tell you first how I wrote this. First of all, David, I never wrote anything in my life, and I never thought of myself of being a writer. How did this happen is I took my two boys when they were in high school, and I took them to do some work for women's shelter. And there was a lady sitting there, and we chatted with each other, and I told her a little bit about how I came to the United States. And that was it. My kids graduated, and then one day I was at the fitness club going home, and I saw her coming, facing me, and I said, "What are you doing here? I thought you are working at the shelter." She goes, "No, Laila, now I am writing an anthropology, I go to Santa Cruz. I joined this group, and I want you to come with me to write your story." And I told her, "No way, I will never do that. I don't know how to write." And she goes, "Just come with me." And for 2 years, David, she was after me at the fitness club when she meets me. Then one day she said, "Today you're going to come. It's registration day, and I'm going to take you with me." I said, "Okay." So I went with her, and I go into this room, and 12 writers are sitting, and each one of them reads from what they have written during the week. And then I looked at the mentor, the woman who runs the class, and I looked at her and I said, "Oh, no way. I cannot write like those people." And then she goes, "Laila, when they all joined the class, they had zero ability to write. And now look how they are." I said, "Yeah, but English is not my first language. I'm not like them. I cannot write." She said, "Okay, why don't you go home? Write to me 2 paragraphs from one room of your childhood." And I went home and I wrote 2 pages about how I used to dress up before I go to school, and I stand outside my father's room so he can give me my allowance, and da 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 da. And then I went the next Thursday, and I was sitting, and she said, "Would you like to read?" I said, "No, no, no. Let them all read first." I was shy and ashamed because I thought my writing was horrible. And then she said, "Okay, you now you can read." And then after I read, she kind of went with her hand over her forehead, and she go, "And you say you never wrote anything? You're going to stay in this class and finish that story." And I stayed, and I wrote the story in 1.5 years, going once a week. And then the editing took me a long time.
That's wonderful. Well, we don't have a lot of time left. Do you have any suggestions to aspiring writers, or any final words that you'd like to say before we end the show?
Yeah, for inspiring writers, I want to tell them, if you want to write, just sit every day for 5 minutes and write anything, whatever it is. And with time, they will develop the ability to write. Anybody can write if they have an imagination. But they have to write every single day in a note, maybe 10 or 10 phrases or one sentence. And this is how they start. And it will come. Worry about bad English or good English or syntax, just write.
Beautiful.
And I want people to buy my book.
Of course. So once again, we're talking with Lila El-Sisi, who has written Out from the Shadows of Men, which is readily available on Amazon.com. And it's an inspiring story, and this has been a very inspiring interview. I thank you so much.
Thank you, David. It's Out from the Shadow of Men.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Lila, and best wishes
thank
to you,
you
with
David.
The sequel. Let me know when it's
thank
out,
you.
Okay?
Thank you
All
so
right.
much. Thank you.
You're
I
welcome.
Bye.
So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Good night, and God bless.